This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'd like to welcome you to Healthline. I am the director of the Cancer Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center. And I'd like to share with you that Healthline is a program of the Yale Cancer Center and is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on the station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer here in our state of Connecticut. We're joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center each week, and together we'll discuss the latest treatment available to people with cancer, as well as the latest advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by sharing information, but also to give you hope as well. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC, and we'll try to answer your questions either today or in the future on a future broadcast. If you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted in audio and written format on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org. Today, our program focuses on advances in the treatment of leukemia, and our guest is Dr. Francine Foss, who is a professor of medical oncology and is the director of the Lymphoma, Leukemia, and Myeloma program at the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Foss is a leading expert in the treatment of leukemia, and her career is focused on developing novel therapies for this disease. Francine, thank you so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you.
Well, let's start out by talking about leukemia, and I'm going to ask very generally, what is leukemia?
Well, leukemia is a malignant disease or a cancer of the bone marrow. It is manifest by circulating white blood cells that are abnormal. So basically what it is, it's an accumulation of lots and lots of abnormal blood cells that can spill over out of the blood into various tissues like the liver and the spleen and other areas of the body.
I want to ask you, obviously there's different types, and can you explain to us, how do you categorize? I've heard, you know, we talk about acute versus chronic and the different myeloid, lymphoid. How does that all fit together?
Well, leukemias are either myeloid, which means that they come from one specific type of white blood cell, or they're lymphoid, which means that they're abnormalities of lymphocytes. And either myeloid or lymphoid leukemias can be either chronic, which means that they're very slowly growing and slowly progressing, or they can be acute, which means that the onset is fairly rapid and patients can get very, very sick.
All right, let's start out talking about one of the leukemias, which perhaps people say is one of the better ones to have, which is chronic lymphocytic leukemia. Can you tell us about that?
Well, chronic lymphocytic leukemia is a very common disease. There are actually about 10,000 new cases per year in the United States, and it's more common as people get older. Most patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia present to their doctor for other reasons. In other words, their doctor gets a blood count during a routine checkup and finds out that they have too many white blood cells. Some patients can have swollen lymph nodes, and some patients can have anemia, but most patients really have no symptoms.
I want to ask you along those lines, share with you a question that we had from Steve, who's from Oxford, Connecticut. He said, my brother was just diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and his doctors recommended no treatment at the present time. So, and he's asking for an explanation. How could that be that they don't want to do anything about it?
Well, one of the reasons that we oftentimes recommend no treatment for chronic lymphocytic leukemia is that patients don't have symptoms. Chronic lymphocytic leukemia really is not a curable disease unless you have a bone marrow transplant, so that's the bad news. But the good news is that most patients really can do very, very well for a long period of time, oftentimes without treatment. The only reason to treat a patient is if they develop significant anemia or low blood counts, or they have swollen lymph nodes.
On the other side of the spectrum is acute myeloid leukemia, and I wanted to ask you, what are the warning signs of that? And after you've seen a patient who's presenting with symptoms, how would you evaluate them?
Well, with acute myeloid leukemia, which is the worst type of leukemia, most patients present with a low blood count. So they may have low platelets and present with bleeding, or they may have low white blood cells and present with various infections and fevers. So it's a very difficult disease once one is diagnosed, because treatment needs to start very, very quickly.
And when you're seeing a patient with acute leukemia, what type of testing do you do to define what's wrong with them and before you make a plan on how to treat them?
Well, one of the first things we do is we look at the blood smear. We look at the abnormal cells. We also do a test called flow cytometry, which is using antibodies to characterize these cells and identify whether they're myeloid or lymphoid. We also do a bone marrow biopsy, which is a procedure that's done in the back. We numb up the bone in the back, and we take a very small sample of bone marrow and look at this under the microscope, and that's really how we make the distinction between the different types of leukemia.
Are any people in particular at higher risk of developing leukemia?
Well, the things that predispose people to developing leukemia are various environmental factors, such as exposure to chemicals or radiation. So we have seen patients, for instance, who are exposed to benzene because they worked in factories, or patients who worked near a nuclear power plant, or patients from Chernobyl in Russia who have developed acute leukemia.
Are dental x-rays a problem? I know that's something people think about.
Well, lots of people worry about dental x-rays and routine chest x-rays, and the amount of radiation that you receive with those kinds of x-rays is very, very small, and that dose of radiation is not known to be associated with the development of leukemia.
Which, by the way, I think it's important information to share because people do worry, and obviously if they need x-rays, I think they're important to proceed with them if their doctor says so. Over your career, what have you seen in terms of progress in treating people with leukemia and the various types of leukemia?
I think some of the most amazing advances in cancer have been in the field of leukemia. One of the reasons for that is that we've been able to identify specific genes that are abnormal in certain types of leukemia, and then we've been able to target specific therapies to direct an inhibition against those genes. So one of those therapies is Gleevec, which is being used for chronic myeloid leukemia. This has really changed the face of that disease in that we're actually able to put many patients in remission. There also are other genes that are abnormal in acute leukemias, and there are novel treatments that are being developed to attack those genes as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about Gleevec, because it's been a very major advance. How does Gleevec work?
Well, Gleevec works because it specifically targets BCR-ABL, which is a gene protein that's produced in patients with chronic myelogenous leukemia. So this is a very, very specific targeted therapy that binds to that gene and inhibits the production of that protein. Without that protein, cells can't become myelogenous leukemia cells.
If you're seeing a patient with chronic myelogenous leukemia and they have a high white count and say their spleen is large, what would you hope for? What would you expect when you start them on Gleevec?
Well, with Gleevec, I would hope that I could put them in remission, and that would happen over the course of several months after they start the medication. So gradually, I would expect that their cancer cells would go away, and then subsequently, I would hope that their spleen would shrink down and that their normal blood counts would return and that they would feel better.
Is this a curable disease?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that question, because we used to say that it was not a curable disease unless you had a bone marrow transplant. But now with Gleevec, there are people that are in remission for a couple of years. And the definition for acute leukemia is that if you're in remission for 5 years, we say that you're cured. So I think it's still an open question, but there's a significant amount of promise and hope that, in fact, we are going to be able to cure people without going to a bone marrow transplant.
Are there patients you can take off Gleevec after a certain number of years if they're doing well?
Well, that's still really not clear. There are some centers that are trying that, but I think most of us feel that patients really need to stay on this medication.
Well, I'd like to ask you to hold on for a few minutes. We're going to have a break for a medical minute, and then please listen in further for more conversation with Dr. Francine Foss, who is a leading expert in the treatment of leukemia at the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center.
Cancer patients become cancer survivors the first day they're diagnosed. There are over 10 million cancer survivors in the U.S., and the numbers keep growing. However, there are long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, impaired growth, and an increased risk of second cancers. Ending cancer treatment can be both exciting and scary. Most people are relieved to be finished with the demands of treatment, but many also feel concerned about whether the cancer will come back and what they can do to prevent a relapse. Cancer survivors require long-term specialized care and support. For more information, log on to www.yalecancercenter.org. That address once again, www.yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with our guest, Dr. Francine Foss, Director of the Lymphoma, Leukemia, and Myeloma Program at the Yale Cancer Center. Francine, before the break, we were talking about leukemia in general, and we talked a little bit about chronic leukemias. I want to focus some on acute leukemia. What has your research taught you in terms of the various types of acute leukemia?
Well, one of the things we've been able to do over the last couple of years is to look at the genes in these different types of leukemias, and we've been able to identify specific subtypes of leukemia, some of which respond to some treatments and not to others. Because we've identified certain mutations in certain genes, we've been able to develop specific drugs targeting those mutations, which at least in animal model systems appear to inhibit the growth of these types of leukemias.
Can you give us an example?
Well, I think one of them is the FLT3 mutation, which we know causes leukemia in animals. In fact, inhibitors for FLT3 have been developed and are in clinical trials right now and look to be very promising. And so in order to use that kind of targeted therapy, what we would do would be that we would screen patients' leukemias for mutations in this gene. And those that express those mutations would be treated with this specific type of targeted therapy.
Is that more likely to be successful, and are there less toxicities by using that approach?
I think it's more likely to be successful for the individual patient, because if you take all leukemias and lump them into a pot and you use any new therapy, you'll have a certain response rate. But what you don't really know is what group of patients is responding best. So the way to approach leukemias now that we know about these various mutations is to identify ahead of time what types of therapies a patient is more likely to respond to based on the genetic profile of the leukemia, and then directly target therapies or tailor treatment for that specific type of leukemia.
I want to ask you about a specific subcategory, which is something called promyelocytic leukemia, because there are some very, very interesting therapies for that. And can you fill us in on that?
Well, promyelocytic leukemia is a very interesting leukemia because many of these patients actually present with bleeding complications. We've learned recently that there are certain types of therapies, such as retinoids, which can actually cause this type of leukemia to differentiate. So it can actually make the cells go from being very aggressive and immature to being mature and essentially not leukemic. So that's been one major breakthrough in the treatment of leukemias. There's another interesting drug that's been used in this setting, and that's arsenic trioxide. So many of you are familiar with arsenic from the old days, and we all know that arsenic is actually a very toxic substance. So when you talk to a patient about getting arsenic as a therapy, that's oftentimes something that most people don't want to do.
I can imagine, yeah.
However, there's been some very interesting data showing that arsenic actually can cure this type of leukemia, and arsenic also is being used in other kinds of leukemias and lymphomas as well.
All right, so I want to go back to the retinoids, which is essentially a type of vitamin A. Is it possible to put people into remission without giving them chemotherapy?
Well, with the patients who have all transretinoic acid, which is the retinoid that's used for acute promyelocytic leukemia, most of those patients will go into remission without cytotoxic chemotherapy, and many of those patients will not need to go on to a bone marrow transplant. Now, that's very different than the approach we had even 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. where all patients with leukemia eventually went on to a transplant.
Yeah, so it actually is pretty amazing to be able to give someone a form of vitamin A, a little bit different, and watch the cells mature. And then arsenic is obviously is a scary word, but it has been a wonderful advance as well. Are any antibodies used in the treatment of acute leukemia?
Well, antibodies are targeted therapies that specifically attach to a protein on the surface of a malignant tumor cell. In the case of leukemias, there are a number of antibodies that have been shown to be very effective. One of them is Myelotarg, which attacks a protein that's expressed on myeloid leukemias. And the other more commonly used one is Campath, which actually attaches to a protein on the surface of CLL cells. So for patients who have CLL and go on to the point where they need therapy, instead of giving these patients chemotherapy, we can actually use this monoclonal antibody therapy, which is relatively non-toxic, doesn't involve side effects such as nausea or hair loss, and oftentimes can get their disease into remission.
You're an expert on stem cell transplant, and I wanted to ask you if you can explain what a stem cell transplant is and who would benefit from a transplant.
Well, a stem cell transplant is also a bone marrow transplant in that we're essentially taking stem cells that arise from the bone marrow from one patient and giving them to another patient. That's called an allogeneic transplant. We also can sometimes harvest stem cells from a patient who's getting chemotherapy, put them in the freezer, and then give that patient high-dose chemotherapy, and then return their own stem cells to them. That's called an autologous stem cell transplant. Just in terms of the source of the stem cells, it used to be that we always needed to get those stem cells from the bone marrow. But recently we learned that if we give doses of a drug called GCSF, or a growth factor, to patients, we can stimulate the patient's bone marrow to produce these stem cells, and they spill out into the peripheral blood. So patients can essentially then go to the blood bank and go through a procedure like donating blood, where we basically take those stem cells out of their blood without having to go into the bone marrow to get them.
Now, a lot of people, I think there's over 3 million, are registered with a bone marrow registry to be a donor. So if you're called on to be a donor, what would that involve now?
Well, nowadays, what that involves for most patients is going into a treatment center and getting the injections of this GCSF medication, which will stimulate your body to produce enough stem cells so that you can then go to the blood bank, get hooked up to this machine, and allow that machine to harvest those cells out of your blood. At the end of that procedure, you should feel relatively well. It doesn't involve anesthesia, and you should be able to go about your normal activities.
So any long-term harm of being a donor?
There's absolutely no long-term harm, and this is sometimes a misconception on the part of patients and their families. The process of donating bone marrow or stem cells is essentially the same as donating blood.
Which obviously is not difficult at all. How do you make the decision about whether to offer an autologous or an allogeneic bone marrow transplant?
Well, I think the decision is really predicated by the type of disease that you're treating as well as the age of the patient. With allogeneic transplantation, that involves getting cells from somebody else. There's an increased risk doing that procedure the older that you get. So if you're over age 60, the risk starts to increase exponentially. So even for acute myelogenous leukemia, for patients who are over age 65, we probably would be very hesitant to do an allogeneic transplant. We do know that there is some benefit to doing autologous transplant in that setting. And for many other diseases, such as lymphoma, autologous transplant is the preferred type of treatment.
To a large majority, or does every patient with acute leukemia need a transplant of some kind?
Well, there are patients with acute leukemia that actually go into remission and can stay in remission without a transplant. And in many instances, what we would do is we would wait until they relapse, treat them with chemotherapy again, and then move them into a transplant. So how do we make that decision when we see a patient? A lot of that really depends on what we call prognostic factors. And those prognostic factors include the chromosomes and the abnormal genes that we find in that leukemia patient. So for one patient with acute myelogenous leukemia, we may say that it's fine for that patient to get chemotherapy and then wait without treatment for a relapse. In another case, we may tell the patient right up front that they need chemotherapy and then they need to move right into a bone marrow transplant.
And that's based on the prognostic factors.
That's right.
They just mentioned. Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story, and then please stay tuned to learn more information about leukemia with Dr. Francine Foss.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's a story of a hero from Hamden.
10 years ago, when I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, there was no cure. After teaching math for 35 years, I was forced to retire. Dr. Tom Duffy at the Yale Cancer Center told me about a new procedure called a mini stem cell transplant. He encouraged me to put my life in the hands of Dr. Stuart Seropian, one of the few doctors in the country doing this procedure. On January 17, 2004, I had a stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. At age 70, I feel like a new man. I owe a great debt of gratitude to my anonymous stem cell donor and to the terrific staff at the Yale Cancer Center. They literally saved my life.
This survivor story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with our guest, Francine Foss, who is the director of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Program at the Yale Cancer Center. And we're discussing the exciting breakthroughs made in the treatment of leukemia. Francine, I wanted to start this third segment of the program by talking about some of the latest research that's being done that you've been very, very involved in for years. And can you tell us a little bit about some of the clinical trials and research efforts here at Yale?
One of the things that we're trying to do at Yale is to develop, again, targeted therapies for leukemia. So we have an open study now for patients with certain types of T-cell leukemia that express CD2, and we're looking at a novel antibody in that setting for those patients. We also have trials open for new drugs that have activity in leukemia, such as clofarabine, which is a drug that was recently approved for patients with B-cell ALL. We're now looking at that drug in patients who have T-cell leukemias as well.
So, for example, a drug like clofarabine, how does that work? And we've again been talking about targeted therapies. What is this target?
Well, the target for clofarabine isn't really very well defined, but like other drugs in its class, it probably goes into the DNA of the cells and allows that DNA to basically fragment so that the cells die.
Okay. And it sounds like that drug works in various types of leukemia.
That's right. And that's uncommon for some of these agents where they may be more selective, say for a T-cell versus a B-cell leukemia.
Now, a lot of your research has been on T-cell lymphoma and T-cell leukemia. And what are some of the projects you're working on, other projects that you're excited about?
One of the things that we're trying to develop at Yale is the use of immunotherapy for patients with leukemia. Up to this point in time, the only kinds of immunotherapy have really been antibody-based treatments. So we're now trying to develop strategies to use cell-based immunotherapies. In other words, we're taking the immune cells from the patients, the good immune cells that should be fighting against the tumor, and we're trying to activate those cells so that we can then inject them back into the patient while they're getting therapy and generate an immune response against the tumor.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you turn on the immune system to fight the disease?
Well, one of the interesting ways that we found to turn on the immune system is the use of a treatment called extracorporeal photopheresis. This is a treatment that was actually developed at Yale, and Yale is now one of the leading centers for the use of this treatment in the context of patients with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, as well as now other kinds of lymphoma, and even in the context of lung cancer, where it's been shown perhaps to be synergistic with radiation therapy. In the context of patients with leukemia, what we'd like to do is we'd like to use the leukemia cells with the patient's antigen-presenting cells and photopheresis to try to educate those antigen-presenting cells or immune cells to fight against the tumor cells. Because one of the problems in leukemia is that the patient's own immune system doesn't recognize the leukemia cells and therefore is incapable of killing them off. So photopheresis will hopefully re-educate those cells so that they can attack the tumor cells.
To re-educate the immune system, what technique are you using? You talked about photopheresis, and how does all that work?
Well, photopheresis is really a light-based therapy. What we do with photopheresis is that we take cells out of the patient, we expose them to a drug called methoxysaurolin, and then we put them through a chamber where they're exposed to ultraviolet light. The ultraviolet light activates the drug in the cells and causes various changes in the cells so that it activates antigen-presenting cells and potentially also it can kill circulating leukemia cells.
And then do you get, so it's, the cells have been in this machine, do you then give them back? And what happens
right,
after that?
The cells come out of the body and go into the machine, and they're in the machine for about 1 to 2 hours undergoing this process with ultraviolet light. At the end of that process, they get reinfused back into the patient. We also are experimenting at Yale with another procedure where we take those cells out of the body, and instead of putting them back in right away, we actually hold them out overnight, and we culture them with various kinds of factors that help them to be stimulated against the tumor cells, and then the following day we reinfuse those back into the patient.
Let me ask you, in terms of a leukemia treatment, many patients will go into remission after a treatment of acute leukemia, but one of the problems is relapse. So is that a failure of the immune system to fight the cells that are left, and might this technique be useful in that setting as well?
Well, if you think about any cancer going into remission, effectively what you do is you take, say, 10 to the 8th cells and reduce it to 10 to the 6th cells. So you come down a couple of logs, but the body still has a tremendous number of tumor cells. Now, the way that the body gets rid of those residual tumor cells is that the immune system has to kick in. So really, any long-term survivor with cancer is a patient that had chemotherapy to knock down their tumor cells to a certain level and then had an immune system that kicked in to really eradicate the residual cells. And so if the immune system is deficient, not functioning properly, we can get patients into remission, but they're not going to stay in remission.
How do cancer cells shut off the immune system? I mean, how do they have that ability?
Well, that's a question that we really don't have a clear answer to, but we do know that cancer cells can produce various factors that make those tumor-fighting cells or antigen-presenting cells tolerogenic, so that instead of wanting to attack the tumor cell as an enemy, they recognize it as a cousin and they want to live side by side. What we're trying to do with photopheresis is activate those antigen-presenting cells so that they go on the attack again against the tumor cells.
And in a sense, that may be, I guess that's one of the strategies with bone marrow transplant. If you give bone marrow from a donor, is that serving the same purpose?
Exactly. Bone marrow transplant essentially is an ultimate form of immunotherapy. What we're really doing with bone marrow transplant is giving somebody else's cells. That person's cells will recognize the patient's tumor cells and essentially kill those cells, whereas the patient's own immune system isn't doing that.
Francine, I wanted to ask you, what clinical trials are available for patients with T-cell leukemia lymphoma?
Well, right now we have a couple of transplant studies that are very interesting and innovative for patients with not only T-cell leukemia, but other leukemias as well. And these studies involve the use of extracorporeal photopheresis along with a reduced intensity conditioning regimen to try to prevent graft versus host disease. This allows us to transplant even older patients, and in fact, we've done patients over age 70 very successfully with this modality. In addition, we're experimenting with a procedure where we actually take the patient's cells and the donor cells and incubate them in the context of activation similar to photopheresis. And we do that before the transplant so that we can sensitize the donor cells against the patient's tumor cells, and we can desensitize against the graft versus host process that occurs when you put somebody else's cells into a patient's body.
Graft versus host disease, I know, is something that you're an expert on as well. How have the treatments for that changed over time and during your career?
Well, it used to be that we really didn't have very good treatments for graft versus host disease. We treated patients with steroids and other medications to try to suppress the immune system. But unfortunately, those medications also suppressed the good part of the immune system, and patients oftentimes developed bad infections. Now we have some novel antibody treatments as well as some new drugs, and we also have photopheresis, which is very, very effective in treating graft versus host disease. And again, it does it by not affecting the normal immune system and not making patients more predisposed to developing bad infections.
How can a patient access these type of clinical trials and other cutting-edge care here in Connecticut?
Well, there are two websites that I'd like to direct you to. One of them is yalecancercenter.org, where you can find a list of all the clinical trials available at Yale Cancer Center. And the other is the Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation, which has a website describing all the different types of leukemias with a number of links to other websites describing various types of therapy. And that's www.leukemia-lymphoma.org.
Well, before we sign off, Francine, can you review with us two or three key messages that you'd like our listeners to hear about advances in the treatment of leukemia?
Well, I think the one key message I'd like to point out is a message that's really reiterated at that Leukemia Lymphoma website, which is that the 5-year survival for leukemia has tripled in the past 46 years. If you look back in 1960, it was about 14% of patients who lived 5 years. Nowadays, it's over 50%, and I think the message there is one of hope. New treatments have been developed, new ways of identifying subtypes of leukemia have been developed, And we're seeing now really an explosion in new types of therapy. So I think the underlying message for all patients is one of hope.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Francine Foss for joining us on Healthline. And remember, tune in to WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on the treatment of lung cancer with our special guest, Dr. Scott Gettinger, who's an assistant professor of medical oncology at Yale. Until then, this is Dr. Ken Miller for the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.